Chapter 26. Ben Williams looked at his watch as the wheels of flight AI-424 from Antwerp touched down. 8:37 p.m. Bang on time. He held up the walkie-talkie in his right hand.
Wheels down, on schedule, be ready.
He had another radio strapped to his belt that he could use to talk to ground control via an earpiece. Ben was a security coordinator. His company moved hundreds of millions of pounds of stock a year, and most of it he just monitored from the office. But this was special. The Antwerp flight came in once every 6 months, and for the last 7 years he hadn't missed one. It was too important. He'd tried to explain that to his wife, Mairead, but she had refused to see his side of things. Her birthday was her birthday, and while his was a movable feast, like when Karen from work had her hen weekend, it apparently did not work the other way around. That argument had happened last week, and in the 5 days since, life in the Williams residence had been like living in Cold War Berlin. He reckoned the only way out of this doghouse, which he still didn't believe he deserved to be in, might involve going big and getting Mairead a diamond. The irony of this wasn't lost on him as he watched flight AI-424 come to a stop at the end of the runway and begin its turn exactly on schedule. Its hold contained £16 million worth of uncut diamonds. Twice a year, the raw materials for every jeweller in Ireland came through Dublin Airport, and it was his job to see that it all ran smoothly. It was a foolproof system. One van took the stones off the plane and into Hangar 3, which had been prearranged to be completely clear. It was under armed guard, with 9 members of the Garda Emergency Response Unit in attendance. There, the diamonds were divided up and ferried by 3 armoured vans, each with 2 armed police escort cars, to their distribution centres around the country. That, of course, was the dangerous part of the operation, especially in light of recent events. This was why there were currently 12 vans in Hangar 3. Nobody but him would know which were carrying actual diamonds, and which just had empty cases in them. He'd like to see them get lucky on those odds. The bosses hadn't been happy about the extra expense, but nobody wanted to be accused of not doing enough should something go wrong. When it came to meeting the plane, it would just be Ben and Peter Lovejoy, a long-serving driver, with Derek and Yvonne in the back of the van, 2 similarly long-serving security guards. For insurance reasons, nobody outside the company's employ could touch any of the boxes. The plane would be stopped in holding area Bravo, as that was the point in the airport where there was nothing but clear open ground for 700 metres in every direction. If a vehicle broke through the airport's outer fencing anywhere, the Garda EORU team currently stationed in Hangar 3 could move to intercept long before they reached the plane. Once the perimeter had been confirmed as clear, Ben informed ground control, who in turn informed the pilot, who then opened the hold doors. In under 2 minutes, the van with the diamonds would be back in Hangar 3 and under heavily armed guard. It happened so quickly, the passengers on board would not even notice. Clean, seamless, foolproof. There was a beep in his earpiece as the female voice of ground control came through.
Flight AI-424 in standby. You may approach.
Ben hit the button on the mic on his lapel.
Roger, control.
Then he picked up the walkie-talkie for his team and the Gardaí.
We are go.
Peter Lovejoy started up the engine and pulled out. The head of the EORU team gave him a nod as they passed out of the hangar. Heaven help any member of airport staff who decided to go for a quick smoke behind Hangar 3. They would end up staring down the barrel of a submachine gun before they'd opened the packet. The van made its way across the tarmac and pulled up at the rear of the Fokker 100 idling in holding area Bravo. Ben got out and looked around. nothing but grass and empty runway in all directions. The nearest buildings were half a mile away. Unless the invisible man had gone into the diamond robbery business, they were untouchable. His walkie-talkie crackled in his hand.
"Perimeter confirmed," said the head of the ERU team in his ear, who would have been informed in turn by the Garda spotters.
"Roger that,"
Ben said into his walkie-talkie, before hitting his lapel mic to the tower.
"Control, we are go."
"Roger that."
30 seconds later, bang on schedule, the rear cargo doors on the plane began to open. The first Ben knew that something was wrong was when he felt the muzzle of a gun pressing behind his ear.
"Move and you are dead."
It didn't sound like a threat. It sounded like a statement of fact. As he stayed absolutely still, a latex-gloved hand ripped the earpiece from his ear and grabbed the walkie-talkie from his hand. While his captor remained behind him, another man in black assault gear, identical to that which the ERU guys were wearing, moved past him. He pointed a handgun through the passenger side door at Peter Lovejoy.
"Stay perfectly still,"
said the voice behind Ben. A thick vest was placed on him, knocking his glasses off his face as it was dragged roughly over his head. Without them, he was as blind as a damn bat. Dark, blurred shapes moved around him. The vest was heavy. Too heavy. He knew what that meant. He tried to think clearly. The van was blocking his view of the ERU team, which meant they could also not see him. By now, someone would be getting suspicious. But how long until they moved? Ben hoped the two staff in the back of the van would stay where they were. The last thing this situation needed was a have-a-go hero. Gunfire would be nothing but bad news for many reasons, not least of which was that they were standing beneath a large plane, which would presumably still have quite a lot of fuel in it. Above all of these thoughts, one kept recurring again and again. These people could simply not be here. They had literally appeared out of thin air. A piece of card appeared in front of Ben Williams' face, and the voice spoke again.
"Read."
I can't see without my glasses."
There was the sound of movement, and then his glasses were thrust roughly onto his head.
"Read," repeated the voice.
The voice was still behind him, presumably holding the gun. The second man was still covering Peter Lovejoy in the van. A third man in a balaclava and tactical assault gear was standing in front of him, holding the card in one hand and Ben's walkie-talkie in the other. The gun nudged him on the back of the head again. Ben focused on the card.
"My name is Ben Williams."
They knew his name. How did they know his name?
"The jacket I am wearing contains 6 pounds of C4. There is another 12 pounds of C4 strapped to the armoured car. Both are on a dead man's trigger."
The man holding a gun on Peter Lovejoy held aloft his left hand, which contained a small cylindrical device, his thumb pressed down on the top of it.
"If the ERU leaves Hangar 3, then my driver dies. If anyone attempts to approach the plane, first the driver dies, then the C4 is detonated. This is not a bluff."
Ben wasn't sure if he was supposed to say the next bit, but the gun nudged him again.
"Exhibit A."
Nothing happened for about 5 tense seconds, and then there was a percussive pop. In the left of his peripheral vision, Ben noticed a puff of smoke as a section of the airport's outer fence collapsed. A second later, a Toyota Hiace van was through the gap and driving fast towards them. The card was turned over.
"Stand down. Call the bomb disposal unit. There are 114 passengers and crew on that plane. Do not test us."
The card disappeared from view and a hand pushed Ben towards the plane. Once directly underneath it, the cable tie was cinched around his hands, cutting into his skin as he was attached to the rear landing gear. A few seconds later, just as the high ace pulled up, he was joined by Peter Lovejoy, who was cable-tied to the other wheel. He looked at the vest Ben was wearing.
Is that...
Ben shushed him before he could say anything else. He didn't want to do anything to antagonize these men. That was the standard advice from the company. If involved in an incident, the word robbery was never used. You should comply with all requests, make no effort at resistance, and instead concentrate only on the safety of yourself and others, and on remembering everything you could to later help police. He had given that course to new staff 2 dozen times, although it didn't cover what to do with 6 pounds of C4 strapped around you. The driver of the high ace, wearing a plastic moulded mask that distorted his face, opened its rear doors, revealing 2 motorbikes. He dropped a ramp and wheeled them out. Meanwhile, 2 of the others were quickly moving the black cases containing the diamonds from the plane's hold into the van. In the middle of it all, the 4th man stood calmly with his hand in the air, holding down the trigger. It took them under 60 seconds to load the van. 19 boxes. Ben counted them in by force of habit. He tried to notice other things. Anything. Most of all, he tried not to think about the vest. The 2 loaders slammed the rear doors shut. One of them joined the driver in the front of the van, which instantly tore off towards the gap in the fence through which it had entered. The other loader hopped onto one of the bikes, pulled a helmet on over his balaclava, and tossed the trigger man an identical one. He pulled it on while walking to the 2nd bike, still holding his hand up the whole time. Ben found himself thinking that, by now, the man's arm must be getting tired. The 1st motorbike roared off towards the fence. Ben watched the trigger man climb onto his bike and kick it into life. Then, for what seemed like an eternity, but may have only been a fraction of a second, he looked into the man's visored eyes. He pointed at the trigger, pressed something on the bottom of it, then casually tossed it towards Ben. Ben never saw the last bike leave as he fainted.